Feeling awesome on a Monday. How y'all doing? We're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Do you want to see your loan options, adjust payments, and closing costs online in real time? Then Rocket can. All right, so good hour. I've got Chris Mannix coming up next segment. We'll talk some NBA with him. I've got Michael Lombardi coming up in the last segment. We'll talk some NFL with him. Phone lines are open. I've got an ATP day, too. You want to get your ATPs in quickly. 1-800-636-8686. Some quick reaction. Rome, bonded with your son. Psst, please.
Please.
Does he feed you beef in bed? Signed, Old Trapper Guy. Casey in New Hampshire. Damn, Case. One day, man. One day. I'll tell you what. One day my kids better feed me beef in bed. That's how that cycle of life goes, yo. I raise you up. I pay your bills. I bust my ass. I get you and put you in a position to have the best opportunities, have the best life possible. When this thing plays out and you're not as successful as me, it's just the way it's going to be, kids. Just kidding. Not really. When it comes around and I'm old and I'm beaten down and I'm bedridden, hell yes, you're going to feed me beef in bed. You bring in that gigantic glass case of beef. Just like we fed you in bed. Just like we changed you. Just like we put you in position. Just like we put food on your table and put an iPhone in your hand. Hell yes. Jimmy, hearing how you and Logan bonded over a sound drop from the show inspired me to do the same with my kids. Can you recommend 16 or 20 more sound drops for me? Thanks, Antonio Cromartie. Chris in Milwaukee. See, the thing about the show is maybe back in the day, I used to make jokes like that, but I don't, but you still do. That's not the way I conduct the show, but I can't stop you from doing you or being you. All right, so quickly, let's talk about the Lakers. I guess that Mark Cuban is not the only big name in the association who is not a fan of the NBA's new play-in tourney. None other than, and no less an authority than, LeBron James. Also not down. Also not a fan. In fact, I would say after listening to LeBron's comments about the league's new creative and innovative idea, that Cube's disdain for it has got nothing on LeBron's disdain for it.
You know, the playoff, whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that need to be fired. But whatever.
Damn, King. How you really feeling about that? Quote, that playoff, whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that needs to be fired. Now my man's just out and out firing people. You like that about as much as playing in the All-Star game. Am I right, King? Here's the thing. The story surrounding LeBron and the Lakers is not so much about whether or not he's a fan of that lame-ass play-in tournament. It's the fact that LeBron is even commenting on that lame-ass play-in tournament. And he's doing so because the Lakers are currently playing like they're going to be in that lame-ass play-in tournament. They're currently sitting sixth in the conference with the same exact record as the Blazers, who are seventh in the standings. And that's exactly where that lame-ass play-in tourney starts. So much for thinking that everything would be just fine in Lakerland once you got your two superstars back, LeBron and AD. Honestly, Laker fan, I'm trying to figure out who had a worse weekend. You or former UFC title contender and former Oak Hills High School IT guy, Dominic Reyes. I'm all about Dominic. I loved having him on the program. For those who do not get that reference, just Google it. Except for you, cyclist Brad. Trust me, you will not want to see that. I'm serious. I'm not sure who had a worse weekend. At least Reyes finally woke up after being face down and unconscious on Saturday night. Right now, though, Herb Dean is still trying to pry the bottom half of the association off of the Lakers' limp, breathless corpse. Lifeless corpse. Look, I'm not one to overreact to the NBA regular season. I'm not one to see doomsday all the time. I'm not one to get all lava-like and hot take with it. I'm not one to say the Lakers are done. It's a long-ass season. There is some time left. You can get in and out of funks, especially if you're the defending NBA champs, especially if the defending NBA champs have an even better roster this year than they did last year. Except, Laker fan, that was a bad weekend, a really bad weekend. Friday night, you finally get LeBron back from that ankle injury.
Finally.
It was his longest break, Rit, of his entire career. Finally, he comes back.
Finally.
You finally get to run him alongside a healthy Anthony Davis. You host a Sacramento Kings team who had just got beaten up by a Utah team by 49. 49. And a De'Aaron Fox-less Sacramento team. So it's a perfect setup for your comeback race. And what happens? You lose by 4. I mean, damn. But I guess that'll happen. It was LeBron's first game back. That's a one-off. It'll happen. It's not going
to
happen again, especially against a Raptors team coming in 12 games under 500. One that you were favored by double digits after just getting punked by Sacramento. One that Van Smack himself bet on. Yeah, I did. Just being fully transparent. Maybe that's exactly the comeback race you needed. A nice, easy setup against Toronto. You get right, you start looking more like the Lakers, who started the season 21-6, and then it all starts to come together. At least I thought it would.
Oh, excuse me, my bad.
Yeah, my bad's right. Because the Lakers went Paul Pierce in their pants. Again. Last night, getting hammered.
In your pants.
These guys come in as 10-point favorites and they lose by 7? I mean, I'd play some of the highlights from that contest from either team, except there weren't any. And to make matters even worse, the presser wasn't much better. Actually, I take that back. The presser was better than anything that actually happened in the game. You notice that when AD was down, not that AD was ever this guy, but when AD was down and LeBron was down, who stepped up as the de facto spokesman of that team? The guy who apparently still is, Kyle Kuzma. Here's Kuz's thoughts on the current state of the purple and gold.
I just don't think we're connected right now. I think we're unhealthy and just not good enough. You know, we're just not together as a whole. Team, staff, everything. So we just got to get back onto it, you know, try to find out some way, somehow to get it clicking again and get that spark.
I'll tell you what, man. I like this guy. I like him off the floor even more than on the floor, and I like him more on the floor. But I like the way this guy shoots straight. Quote, I just don't think we're connected right now. I think we're unhealthy and just not good enough. We're not together as a whole. Team, staff, everything. That's an amazing statement. The guy just went bam, bam, bam. We're not connected. We're not healthy. We're not good. We're not together. And it's the team, the staff, everything. Damn, Kuz. Calling everybody and everything out. What, nothing on Genie. Nothing on Rob Lowe. It's kind of funny, too. Like the Nets, as an example. The Nets are as banged up as L.A., if not more so. They don't even have James Harden, and they may not get him back to the playoffs. But you don't hear any of them talking about injuries or coaching or not being connected after their recent losses. So, are the Lakers sounding the alarms? Yeah, kind of, sort of. Get this, though. Coach Kuz was not done. He had some actual takes for the actual coach and his rotation for Coach Vogues.
I wish we could get a little bit more time out there with Mark. You know, that'd be something that would be pretty good for us for sure.
Tell you what, man, Kuz, it's my dude right there. Now he's calling into question, and I love Frank Vogel, but now he's calling into question his rotation. Coach Kuz is like, yo, man, how about my guy Mark? That might be something that might be pretty good. Maybe we can get him some more time. Like, Kuz is all up in here now lobbying for more playing time for teammates. I mean, my man, Coach Kuz, is feeling himself and letting it rip. Of course, what he's talking about is Mark's role has been limited since the team added big man Andre Drummond. And Mark is on record as saying he's not real happy about that. Something tells me that if Coach Kuz is talking about the rotation publicly, and we already know that Marc Gasol is not happy about it, something tells me the chemistry is not just right, not perfect. Tell you what, I can't wait to hear what Coach Kuz has to say if they lose tonight to Denver. Because the Lake Show has now lost 6 of their past 7. They're 0-2 since the King came back. They're 1-5 since struggling AD has come back. And Coach Kuz is not happy about everything he's seeing. Like I mentioned, I'm not going to go all doomsday with it, but I'm not going to lie either. That squad does not seem like these are minor bumps in the road to a repeat. Yeah, I don't know, Laker fan. You better get right, and you better get right quickly, because now you're running out of time. Get right now, or you'll be playing in that playoff format that LeBron speaks so glowingly of.
Whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that need to be fired. But whatever.
Whoever came up with that bleep needs to be fired. I mean, that's a dude who's just lashing out. That's not like the measured normal thing you'd expect from Braun. Whoever came up with that bleep needs to be fired. So in other words, it's not just a matter of getting AD back. It's not just a matter of getting LeBron and AD back, because these guys are back and they're still getting slapped. And they're getting slapped by slappies. And Coach Kuz ain't happy.
Need to be fired, but whatever.
And that whole playing thing where they might end up, whoever came up with that bleep needs to be fired, according to Braun.
Need to be fired, but whatever.
But whatever. Which one is it, man? Whoever came up with that bleep needs to be fired, or whatever.
Need to be fired, but whatever.
Normally, I'd go to LeBron, but right about now, I think instead I'm going to go to Coach Kuz. Let's go to Green Bay. What can I say, man? In market, on topic, that's still the biggest thing right now in sports. Aaron Rodgers and his unhappiness with the team. David in Green Bay. David, how are you?
Hey, how we doing, Rome? Hey, on the subject of basketball real quick, the West doesn't scare me a bit. If my Bucks can get past the Nets, I think we're going to be fine now that we got Tucker on the roster. We finally got a guy who knows how to foul. Anyways, to stay on topic with this Aaron Rodgers thing, you know, I think when you look at Rodgers, I think he's got that Jeopardy contract all but wrapped up. Anyone that can read a Nielsen rating can see that. I think that if you take a step back and you look at life instead of a football life, Jeopardy's a $500 million for that man over the next 30 years. I mean, 40 years from now, he can be pimping the life insurance and the final burial expense if that works out well. So the $37.5 million from the Packers, I wouldn't worry too much about the scratch and that in the discussion. And also, I don't think it's fair that Gutz getting the blame for this. I think this goes right up to Mark Murphy, the president, on how this went down with Love and everything else. And I would make the argument that it is a heck of a lot harder to find an all-star quarterback or a good GM than a president. Jimmy, I want to give a shout-out to Eric P., who was our high school quarterback in 95 when we went 0-18 from Bayport High School, who Cole Van Lannen was selected from in the draft by the Packers this year. He dragged my sorry ass to tour stop number 3, and I've been with you for 25 years. This is the first Vine you've ever given me, Romy. Thanks for the call. I'm out.
My man, David in Green Bay, finally did it. And how did he get in here? with an 0-18 quarterback that dragged him to the Green Bay tour stop. Yeah, one of my best ones ever. One of my favorite ones ever. Let's never forget, Alvin. It was the appearance in Green Bay where Bill Plaschke was there. I was there for the NFC Championship game. Green Bay, Carolina. Well, actually, I was there for the appearance. Bill Plaschke was there covering the game for the LA Times. I dragged him into a bar. He tried to, quote, fight an entire bar of drunk Packer fans.
You know why the people here can sit through the games, though.
Plaschke, how do the people of Green Bay sit through Packer football
games? After sitting in a branch for 6 hours waiting for a deer to run underneath a branch, you can sit in the stands after sitting on a sheet of ice trying to kill a sturgeon with a spear. How many people here have ever tried to kill a sturgeon with a spear? That's all I want to know. Yeah, look at them. Look at all of them. Who in the hell tries to kill a sturgeon with a spear? It's the truth. They sit on ice. They sit on ice and they watch for the fish. And then they stick that spear down through the ice to get the fish. Is that right? Look, that's right.
Ice.
No wonder they can sit through a Packer game.
They're chanting, oat, oat, oat. I still love that one guy saying, you're next.
Who?
Plaschke, Bill Plaschke is so awesome. He is such a great journo. He is such a great writer. He is such a great columnist. And he was so far ahead of his time. Understand, if somebody did something like that right now, I'd be like, who cares, man? You get your phone out. Somebody would try and get all viral with it, turn it into a TikTok, snap it to somebody. This was before any of that. That was Plaschke in 1997, just getting real with it. But it was a foreign concept. What do these people do, man? They sit on a block of ice. They get out a chainsaw. They cut a hole in the ice. They freeze. They get out a sturgeon, or they get out a spear, and they try and stab sturgeons. Like, it was the most foreign concept he'd ever heard. And now here we are in 2021, and I'm that guy.
Here we are.
That's me. I haven't done it yet, but I will. I own a home in Wisconsin. I'll be doing that. I can't wait to do that. Man, it all comes around, doesn't it? Bill Plaschke, legend. So I bring that up because that caller just said, I've never called before. That's my first fine ever. But a kid who went 0-18 as a high school quarterback dragged me to your tour stop. And I've been with you ever since. When we come back, Chris Mannix joins us. So it's now a good time to panic with the LA Lakers or not. I do love that caller also saying, hey, man, I'm not worried about the West. I'm not worried about the West. Well, you're not worried about the West. You're not worried about the Western Conference? For real, you should be. Are you looking for professional level protection for your car's paint, but without the cost that you would pay a professional detailer? New revolutionary 303 graphene nanospray coating provides just that, 12 months protection with a simple mode of application. You can do it yourself in no time at all. It leaves your car's finish with insane levels of shine and depth, and the water beading is crazy. Your car will never look better. It also helps to keep your car looking that way longer, too. The layer of protection helps to repel dust. It fights off water spotting, and it does this by making water shed quickly from the surface and by lowering the surface temperature. So, the water does end up drying on the paint. Does not, actually. It's also great to use on your car's glass, wheels, and trim as well. It's available right now at Advance Auto Parts and Pep Boys locations nationwide. You can learn more by going to 303radio.com, 303radio.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Now, this right here is an awesome conversation. And not because he's a very good friend of me personally in the program, but he's the only guy who can have this conversation. And you'll see what I mean in just 1 minute. He's a senior writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover NBA Show podcast with Chris Mannix and Howard Beck, host of the SI Boxing podcast with Chris Mannix, Canelo v. Saunders, Saturday live from Texas on DAZN, friend of the program, Chris Mannix. What's going on with you, Chris? How are you?
What's going on, Jim?
How you feeling, dude?
Getting a little bit warmer here in the Northeast, so it's starting to pick up a little bit.
That's
I like
a good
it.
Thing, man. You can't beat that. I get that. No. All right, so let me jump in with the Lakers lose to the Raptors last night. They have lost six of their last seven. LeBron got banged up or looked banged up last night. He also made it very clear, Chris, after the game that he is not a fan of the play-in tournament. How do the Lakers look to you right now?
I mean, they don't look good. And now you have Dennis Schroeder out for almost 2 weeks with health and safety protocols. That's another body blow. This team was 0-4 when Schroeder went out in late February. He's been a really integral part of what they do, either starting or with that second unit. So this is, I don't know if it's red alert yet, but it's certainly in yellow alert type territory where you do have to wonder if the Lakers wind up in that play-in tournament, which seems very much a possibility at least, how challenging is it going to be for them? Now, I think they still will get into the playoffs, but if they're really grinding in that opening round, you're having to play what is in essence, you know, maybe one or two game sevens just to get into the playoff field, will that take something out of them? I have my concerns about where the Lakers are right now.
I do, too. I agree with you. Chris Mannix joining us. In terms of the format itself and the play-in tournament, Chris, I know you heard this, but let me reset this very quickly. LeBron is not happy about the play-in format.
You know, the playoff, whatever that thing is, whoever came up with that need to be fired, but whatever.
So, Chris, your thoughts on that. For instance, Adam Silver and the folks in the league office, what do they think about the play-in games, and is anybody going to get fired as a result of them?
No, nobody's getting fired. And it's a little bit of ironic's the right word, but it's notable that the players and the teams complaining about the play-in tournaments are teams and players that are potentially going to fall into it at that number seven spot. You know, when Dallas was griping about it, that was in part because they were the number seven seed at the time. The Lakers could wind up as the number seven seed and be forced to play, as I said, one or two games to get into the postseason. I can understand to a degree why players don't love it, but I think there are more players that do because they're able to compete for playoff spots in the final months of the season when ordinarily they might not. And far more importantly, it's reduced the number of teams that are tanking at the end of the season. Jim, I know it's been a while since we've had a traditional NBA season, but you go back and look at the last month, 2 months of every NBA year, it's awful basketball because teams, for the most part, have been, you know, playing young guys, not playing guys at all. The number of Oklahoma City Thunders would be in the 3 or 4 range instead of like 1 to 2 right now with teams that are trying to just mail it in. So I think for the league overall, the play-in tournament has been excellent. Now, does it need to be tweaked moving forward? Absolutely. I think there's no real need to have the 7 seed involved. I think the 8-9 is probably the best way to go about it. And I think taking it a step further, you know, I don't think you need an 8 seed that is 5 games up on a 9 seed having to play to get into the playoffs. But if there's a difference of 1, 2, or 3 games, then yes, there should be a play-in opportunity for those two teams. It just makes the league much more exciting. Like, Jim, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I love their version of this, you know, where it's just a one-game playoff series to open the postseason. That's oftentimes, it's like the only game I watch until the World Series. And I think the NBA is going to have a similar impact on its viewers, having kind of winner-go-home type games early in the playoffs.
I think you're right. And to that point about how the ones who are complaining the most vociferously about the play-in are those who are going to be in the play-in. So, yes, yeah. I agree. Chris Mannix joining us. Let me change up on you, Chris. Canelo Alvarez is going to take on WBO title holder Billy Joe Saunders on Saturday in Arlington on DAZN. For those who are not familiar with Saunders, who is he and what kind of a threat does he pose to Canelo?
Well, he's an excellent boxer, probably the most skilled boxer Canelo has faced since he beat Arislandi Lara back in 2014. And there are some similarities there between the two. Both are southpaws, both are excellent movers, both operate behind a solid jab. You know, one of the things I worry about with this fight is, will it be highly entertaining? Like, I don't see Billy Joe Saunders going in there and trying to bang with Canelo. I think he's going to go in there and try to use his diverse skill set to sneak out and steal a win. His best chance of winning this fight is going to be frustrating Canelo in ways that he has been frustrated since the days of Lara and Floyd Mayweather, which were very early in his professional career. So I think that's what Saunders is going to do. But the answer to that question of can he do it is that Canelo's not the same guy that, you know, lost to Mayweather and squeaked out a win over Arislandi Lara. He has vastly improved since then. So whatever Saunders is going to try, I'm sure he'll have his moments, but he's going up against a guy that is not only the most popular fighter in the world today, at least in the U.S., but he is, I think, the most skilled fighter in the world as well.
Talking to Chris Mannix. Now, Chris, the sport is also dealing with the news of lightweight Felix Verdejo, who has been accused of killing an ex-lover after finding out that she was pregnant. You had tweeted that there are shades of Ray Carruth in this story. For those who are not familiar with it, who is he and what is he accused of?
Well, Felix Verdejo was a 2012 U.S. or Puerto Rican Olympian and one of the most compelling prospects coming out of that Olympic class. Now, in recent years, he has stumbled a bit. He's taken some losses, and he hasn't lived up to all that potential, but he's still someone that, at 135 pounds, was a factor in that division. And this news just came out of nowhere. And when I tweet and say that it has shades of Ray Carruth, we all know the story of Ray Carruth, who shot and killed the mother of his child. The child thankfully survived. This woman that Verdejo is accused of killing is also reportedly was the mother of his child, was pregnant, a month pregnant with his child. Now, of course, the child didn't survive this murder, but that was my immediate reaction. You get these flashbacks of someone doing something so heinous, and if you read the details of how this woman was killed, it's heinous. Someone doing so heinous that you know that the child has something to do with it. That just brought me all the way back to the early days of reading the Ray Carruth story.
It is heinous. It's extremely grim. Chris Mannix joining us for a few moments. Chris, let me ask you something. You and I have talked boxing for so many years. You love the sport. I love the sport. What do you make of Jake and Logan Paul and their forays into boxing?
I think it's great for them. I was part of the Logan Paul KSI kind of promotion that aired on DAZN about a year and a half ago. I think Logan Paul is a genius. I mean, his understanding of how to bring in viewers and the whole YouTube social media experience, it's on another level. So I learned a lot just being around Logan Paul. I don't watch it. I didn't watch Jake Paul against Ben Askren. I'm not going to watch Logan Paul against Floyd Mayweather. I just don't care. But I think for fighters that are fighting on the undercard, whether it was Regis Prograis who fought on the Jake Paul undercard, or guys like Badu Jack and John Pascal who are going to be the co-main event of the Mayweather card, it's a great chance to be introduced to a whole bunch of new eyeballs that don't ordinarily watch boxing, and maybe, just maybe, you can win over a few fans. Now, if I'm a boxer and I'm watching Jake Paul put up all these numbers and Logan Paul put up all these numbers, don't gripe about them. Go look in a mirror and look at yourself. Look at the fights you've taken. How many fights happen, Jim, in the U.S. that nobody gives a damn about? I mean, the schedule is polluted with them. If fighters, and people talk about how social media, guys should be more active on social media. Did Sugar Ray Leonard need social media to become a superstar? Did Muhammad Ali need social media to become the face of boxing? Did Mike Tyson back in his days? No. What they did was they consistently fought great fights that brought in huge audiences. These fighters today don't do it. So I'm not here for the argument that Jake Paul and Logan Paul might be hurting boxing. Boxing hurts boxing. And boxing can catch up to Jake Paul and Logan Paul very quickly by fighting the best fights.
Chris Mannix joining me. I got to say, Chris, for the record, I watched Jake Paul and Ben Askren, and not only did I do so, I did so willingly. Not only did I do so, I paid for it. Not only did I do so, I spoke to Ben Askren on a podcast the week leading up to it. Now, I'm not saying that I'm pro Jake and not pro Logan. I don't have as much interest or any in Logan and Mayweather. But man, how do you not acknowledge if there is something there, right? And these guys are, for better or for worse, they're genius and they're good at making money. There's something to that. There's something to take away from this.
Oh, of course. I mean, they're characters, and they have mastered the art of self-promotion. And if you're Jake Paul, you have a great understanding that you can take on high-profile MMA guys and probably win these fights. I mean, Jake Paul's not a bad boxer.
He's not a great boxer
by any stretch, but he's not bad. He's going to beat 90% of these MMA guys that come in. I mean, I've said this a million times. Both boxing and mixed martial arts are combat sports. They're not the same sports. They're basically baseball and wiffle ball is really what they are. And, you know, Jake Paul knows that if he fights Tyron Woodley or if he fights another, like Daniel Cormier, which happened at the last UFC event, they're face-to-face, he's going to win. He's probably going to win. He's going to make a boatload of money doing it. So I wouldn't expect Jake Paul to take a serious fight anytime soon. There's no real upside to it. But if he can keep beating up on these MMA stars, which I know drives Dana White crazy, he's going to make a boatload of money over the next few years.
You and I, on a different segment, could get into this. He's not going to beat Cormier. I see your point. Believe me, he's really, really smart about picking the biggest name with the lowest amount of risk that gives him credibility. Cormier's a different animal now. That's a different dude.
I don't think so. I don't think he's a different animal at all. I think he's a much bigger step up than Ben Askren, who everybody knew from watching him wasn't a striker, and Cormier is a better striker from what I've seen of him, and said he can get down to 205 to fight Jake Paul, but it's just an entirely different skill set. And if you get hit with a right cross from a boxer, it's just so different that I would just bet on Jake Paul against virtually any MMA boxer out there right now.
All right, Chris Mannix, my guest, dude, appreciate you very much. Thank you. Chris Mannix, he's the best. I disagree with that particular take. I'm not saying this because we're done. We're up against it. I got to get to my next interview. Ben is the worst striker ever. Amazing wrestler. Great dude. Worst striker ever. And I'm not here to hate on Jake Paul. Like, I gave him his respect. I think he's a decent boxer. He's not beating Cormier. When we come back. And nothing but respect to my man Chris Mannix, who I love. He would argue that point until the end of the day, which I respect. We agree or disagree on that one. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Fact is, I never have as much time with this guy as I want, so I'm going to get right to it. We're joined right now by an NFL insider for The Athletic, co-host of the GM Shuffle podcast. He is an author. He is a three-time Super Bowl winner. He is co-creator of The Daily Coach. He is Michael Lombardi. Michael, great to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So, Michael, when we're talking about Aaron Rodgers and the situation, you know, it goes back to the drafting of Jordan Love. I'm just jumping right into this. I want to go back to 2014 because you were with the Patriots in a similar situation. That was the year the Patriots drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. How did they handle that when it came to Tom Brady?
Well, you know, the reality is because Robert Kraft has a relationship with Brady and because he realizes the importance of what Brady has done along with Coach Belichick, that we reached out to him to let him know that we were going to select a quarterback in the second round, that this was going to be the plan moving forward in the sense that, you know, it wasn't a slap at him. It was just we needed to get some depth to back up, explain the plan to him. And, you know, what I wrote about in The Athletic, Jim, and I think this is really lost in the whole picture of Aaron Rodgers. If there would be an owner in Green Bay, somebody who appreciates and understands the value of what this player has done for his bank account, like, let's just take a look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Today it came out that Brady has sold more jerseys and they've increased their jersey sales by 1,200%. That's money in the Glazers' pocket that they got from Brady being there. They appreciate that. You have to. And I think that's missing in Green Bay. Mark Murphy, the president, he runs the team like it's his athletic department. There's no one going and reaching out and really schmoozing with their best player.
I think that's really interesting. Like, he's more of an AD than he is an owner. So if you were in the Packers organization and you were drawing up the list of priorities, where does keep Aaron Rodgers happy fall on that list of priorities?
Number one, after the season, I said the first thing I would have done is gone to him and extend his contract and said, look, Aaron, I understand that you're in the same bracket as Russell Wilson, that you're in the same pay scale, believe it or not, as Jared Goff. But when Dak Prescott's deal gets done, you and I need to sit down and we need to revisit it because I know you're a better player than Dak Prescott. And here's where you have to. It's easy for me to say just play with the contract. Well, Dak Prescott makes $40 million a year. That's $7 million more than Aaron Rodgers makes. If he's going to play three more years for me, that's $21 million he's losing out over his career. That's just not like a little piece of the pie. That's significant. And players understand that. And he's our franchise. Trust me, he's put more than $21 million into the bank account for the Green Bay Packers franchise than anybody. And so you had to do that. Once the season was over, you needed to revisit that conversation.
Michael Lombardi is joining us for talking about the Packers situation. Michael, what about this? I mean, could you argue the fact that this goes back even before the Jordan Love pick and actually goes back to when the Packers hired Matt LaFleur? Does this have any impact on where they are right now?
I believe it does, because for me, when you have a marquee quarterback, somebody who's experienced, and you hire a coach who really wasn't very good as the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, they ranked 27th in the National Football League in offensive football when Matt LaFleur was running their team. They got better when Arthur Smith took over. And let's be real honest, there was a game against the Baltimore Ravens against Don Martindale, who can't get a head coaching interview, where Martindale didn't even allow him to convert a third down. And so, you know, Rodgers needs stimulation. He needs somebody that's going to go in there and really, really embrace what he wants to do. And I think that LaFleur's a young coach learning how to become a head coach, right? That puts another burden on the back of Aaron Rodgers. Do you really think that the 26 regular season wins the Packers would have would be there if it wasn't for Aaron Rodgers? Does anybody think that that coaching staff is allowing them to win? I mean, Mike Pettine doesn't really – he's gone after a year. So my point here is you hired a young coach who's growing. You put more on Rodgers' plate to carry the team.
Michael Lombardi is an NFL insider for The Athletic. He is the co-host of the GM Shuffle podcast. He is the co-creator of The Daily Coach. So, Michael, the team has been pretty emphatic about we're not moving this guy. We're not going to trade this guy. Can you see a scenario where they would trade him?
No, I don't. I mean, nobody wants that blood on their hands. Nobody wants to walk away in their career knowing you were the guy that traded Aaron Rodgers, especially coming off an MVP season. I mean, seriously, he was the MVP of the league. You're going to go trade him now? How do you sell that? Now, look, Packer fans will be Packer fans for the rest of their life, but that will scar anyone for the rest of their life. I think they have to try to make nice. They got to find a way to make peace. You know, I'm not buying that he doesn't like Gutekunst, because the organization is run by Murphy. Murphy splintered the organization. When Ted Thompson retired, then Murphy decided to take the power of the football operations away from Ted Thompson, who had it in his contract. He gave the GM title to Gutekunst. He didn't give the authority to Gutekunst. He kept it for himself, and he made the coach and the general manager report to him directly. In the past, the general manager had the coach reporting to him because he was in control of all football operations. That's a huge difference.
So that's a huge difference. Do you think that they make this thing right with Rodgers? And if not, could you really see him walking away from the game?
Well, that then benefits the Packers, because in everyone's contract, if you retire, you have to start paying back money on the retirement, on the bonus. I mean, that's what happened with Andrew Luck. But Jim Irsay, once again, appreciating what Andrew Luck did for his franchise, the value he increased his franchise by, said, you know what, Andrew, I don't want that signing bonus money back. You keep it. They have that right to ask him for that back, and that's the only caveat that they have over Aaron Rodgers, is to say, look, if you want to play, if you want to retire, you're going to have to pay us back. And that becomes really a game of chicken. Who's going to blink first?
Michael, I mean, if they're being honest, is there any part of the Packers that would be happy to see Aaron retire and just be done with this whole thing so they can start the succession plan and not have to worry about this?
Well, I can't imagine it, because, I mean, they've watched Jordan Love practice. And if their confidence in Jordan Love is at an all-time high, they wouldn't be screaming that there's no way they're trading Aaron Rodgers. They wouldn't be screaming that. if they felt like Jordan Love, based on the practices, we didn't see him play last year, Jim, so we don't know. But my hunch is I don't think Jordan Love's ready for primetime. I think it's going to take a little bit more time. And I think if that really causes for alarm, I mean, where would the Packers' win total be if they didn't have this player? You know, they wouldn't be the favorite of the North. It would be Minnesota, even though Minnesota's going through a little bit of rebuilding. The Packers defensively have never been dominant with, you know, we saw that in the playoff game. Their right tackle, their left tackle situation because of Bakari's injury last year. This is not an overly talented team. This is a team that has a talented quarterback who makes everybody else better.
Michael Lombardi, my guest. Really quickly, Michael, a few weeks back, you and I spoke about the 49ers and what they might do with that third pick. Ultimately, they go with Trey Lance. What did you make of that decision?
I think they got cold feet. I think it was for Mac Jones, and I think they the pressure around Mac Jones, I think that they decided to go with Trey Lance. I'm not buying it was Trey Lance all along. Too many people in the league told me it was Mac Jones. They traded up for Mac Jones. Even Adam Schefter reported today they were in love with, they got almost walked down the aisle with Mac Jones, and they found someone else to marry.
That's really interesting, right? So really quickly, what do you think about the pick itself and the upside? Is this going to work out for them, and is it ultimately going to be the right choice?
I think that's going to take time. I mean, look, let's face it. Trey Lance isn't ready to play. Threw 317 passes, the least amount of any first-round quarterback in the history of the game. He's going to take some time to play. He's going to make a lot of mistakes. I think he's a year away from really us evaluating him.
He is an NFL insider for The Athletic. He is a three-time Super Bowl winner, co-host of the GM Shuffle podcast, and co-creator of The Daily Coach. He is Michael Lombardi. Michael, I appreciate you and the time, as always. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Michael Lombardi. ATP brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. And for the ones who get it done, Grainger. Offering supplies and solutions for every industry, backed by 24/7 support, free access to product specialists, and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. You want to call or click Grainger.com, or if you don't mind, just stop right on by. It's a good Monday show. Really good Monday show. My thanks to Charles Robinson, Chris Mannix, Michael Lombardi. Solid day with you clones. Have an awesome Monday. I will see you right back here tomorrow in case you missed it. Check out episode 172 of the Jim Rome Podcast, Eddie Olczyk. Yes, we already talked about the Derby, but he's big on the NHL. We talk some life. Make sure you check that out, too. Episode 172 of the Jim Rome Podcast. Have a great day. See you tomorrow. We're out.